Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Dan Foster of National Review Online in for Jim today. And I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives to chew on today as we start the work week. Let's start with the good news as usual. And a lot of the Republican presidential hopefuls and some of the folks still trying to decide if they want to be a Republican presidential hopeful speaking at the Republican Leadership Conference in New Orleans. And one of the ones that got the most attention is Texas Governor Rick Perry. His star has kind of been on the political rise here in the past several days, since a lot of folks still seem to want a couple other options when it comes to the GOP nomination next year. And he gave a pretty impassioned speech at this meeting, got a very rousing reception, and his basic theme was, it's time for conservatives to stop being ashamed of what they really stand for. Here's a little bit of a snippet of what he sounded like.
And we need to stop apologizing for celebrating life. We need to stop apologizing for wanting to protect an individual's right to build a business. We need to stop apologizing about stemming the tide of entitlement mindset that's out there.
And then the governor pretty much summed up what he thought was a wrong-headed approach to trying to appease those on the left.
And our loudest opponents on the left are never going to like us, so let's quit trying to curry favor with them.
And so I'm sure some folks will say that that's being rigid and not bipartisan and all sorts of other things, Dan. But telling conservatives to stand proud for what they believe in is something I think everybody's going to like to hear, and especially at a time when everybody's carefully trying to craft their statements to not only appeal to the base, but also independents during the general election season. Just putting it right out there has got to sound pretty good to folks.
Well, yeah, certainly he's going to fire up the base with talk like that, but he's also an appealing enough candidate on just in terms of style and character that he's probably going to be able to court some independents as well. You know, I quip that he's got Mitt Romney's hair without Mitt Romney's policy problems. So he does fine on style, but it also occurs to me that with Perry, his strengths are also his weaknesses. I mean, he's got executive experience in an election where we're really craving that on the right. He's the longest serving governor of Texas, and he's done a really good job there of growing business and creating jobs, and compares very favorably with President Obama. You can kind of, in 2012, imagine fighting the battle between the Texas model and the Chicago-Washington model, and frankly, on the numbers, there's no comparison. But at the same time, he's the governor of Texas. He's the conservative Republican governor of Texas. You know, when I listened to those sound bites, I even heard a little bit of George Bush in his diction and in his manner. So that's going to be a big question. And he also hasn't had to fight particularly hard for reelection. Constitutionally, the governor of Texas is not especially powerful. So I have questions about whether, you know, his campaign and fundraising machines are up to speed for a 2012 run. But he certainly is right now the most interesting non-declared candidate.
Yeah, certainly true. And as you mentioned, he's not really been threatened in his three different elections for governor, but there have been some pretty serious intra-party fights, one that drew Kay Bailey Hutchison in the 2010 race. He soundly defeated her in the primary, ultimately, in a very anti-Washington year. But he's definitely made some enemies there. And like you mentioned, the Texas Republican governor thing might be a little bit too soon for some who had a little bit of Bush fatigue on the left, right, and middle. So definitely some pluses and minuses.
The other thing is things like the secession talk shouldn't be a major liability, but that's the kind of soundbite that the mainstream media is going to love playing over and over again if he emerges as a primary frontrunner and certainly in a general election.
On to Martini number two now, and on to our bad news of the day. And the debt ceiling issue has been one that's been brewing for a long time. Now, August 2nd is supposedly D-Day on this, although a lot of folks will point out that we're not actually going to default on anything if we actually get to that point without an extension. And Republicans had been seen to be drawing a line in the sand here. John Boehner saying we're definitely going to have more cuts than we'll raise the debt ceiling, so we're going to be a net positive, at least in terms of that transaction. But then Mitch McConnell over the weekend on Face the Nation on CBS, while saying that he definitely wants that, wants entitlements to be addressed and reformed and have a comprehensive plan in place to not just allow spending to spiral out of control, said this if it doesn't happen.
Everybody knows you have to tackle entitlement reform. If we can't do that, then we'll probably end up with a very short-term proposal over a few months, and we'll be back having the same discussion again in the fall.
Dan, that sounds to a lot of people, I think, like kicking the can down the road yet again. It reminds them of the debate over the continuing resolutions earlier this year where Republicans obviously claimed they wanted major spending cuts, but in the end, their bottom line was they didn't want the government shutdown. Now it's we won't default, and even though that doesn't seem to be a realistic fear, it seems like when the clock starts ticking closer and closer to zero, they're less and less bold.
Yeah, you know, we won't default. That talk is basically Democratic scare tactics, but at the same time, as conservatives, we should be consistent about our message that regulatory uncertainty, tax uncertainty, and in this case, credit uncertainty are bad for job growth. They're bad for the American economy, and they're ultimately bad for America. So as conservatives, we should be on the lookout for things that would unsettle the market more than is absolutely necessary. And if all that Senator McConnell is doing here is trying to cover his backside a little bit there, and like House Republicans, trying to say assuring things to the market at the same time as he's signaling to his political adversaries that they're not going to give up and roll over on this fight, well, then that's all to the good. But as you say, it ends up sounding a lot like the continuing resolution debate, which, you know, that CR, that long-term CR, I supported at the time and probably would support again as the best possible deal given the longer-term challenges we were facing and given the political climate at the time. But the fact of the matter is that it wasn't a very good deal. And if Republicans are going to end up doing the same thing on the debt ceiling where they kind of talk a big game, have to pass a couple of stopgap measures, and then end up just kind of rolling over if they feel as though they've been given enough political cover. If that happens again, well, they're just going to take a major and perhaps unrecoverable hit to their credibility.
On to martini number three now, and on to the crazy one. And yesterday at the U.S. Open, played just outside of Washington, definitely a good day for Rory McIlroy. He won in record-setting fashion, was never really threatened. NBC had a lot of time to fill, and so one of the things that they tried to fill it with was a short feature package, kind of dramatic, explaining the importance of the patriotism of the U.S., especially as the tournament was just outside the nation's capital. And so they had shots of kids reciting the pledge in conjunction with military folks raising the flag, and see if you can figure out what got left out.
And to the Republic, for which it stands, one nation.
Obviously, Under God was left out. That's been a major focal point for those who don't like to see any reference to God in the public square. Later on in the broadcast, here's NBC's Dan Hicks sort of offering an apology.
Regrettably, a portion of the Pledge of Allegiance that was in that feature was edited out. It was not done to upset anyone, and we'd like to apologize to those of you who were offended by it.
So if you were offended, he's sorry. If you weren't, no big deal. And in terms of the fact that it was edited out, he said it wasn't edited out to offend anyone. I'm just curious, Dan, as to why then it was. I'm pretty sure that another half second of the words "under God" would not have influenced their 7 hours of coverage yesterday too much.
They say it wasn't edited out with the intention of offending anybody, but you know what? It was edited out with the intention of not offending a different demographic, which is the very small but very loud group of liberals who are offended by the presence of any religious language or any religiosity in our national discourse, our national paraphernalia. And so if the game you're playing is not offending people, then how about we default on going with the words that are actually in the Pledge of Allegiance, which is "under God" is included. And who was the liberal columnist last week who wrote a column about how America would be much better if everything was just run like the military was, because they have universal health care and things like that? My colleague Jonah Goldberg wrote a post on it, but I forget whether it was Cohen or Dion or one of those guys. But you know, was that the underlying message here of removing "under God" and splicing in this militaristic cadence in the middle of it? I don't know. But when in doubt, go with the words of the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to go. And NBC just created a whole bunch more problems for themselves than were necessary because they decided to get too cute and too politically correct. Kind of a sad commentary, but I guess enough people called in and called in quickly that they apologized for it on the air, although it was one of those half-hearted, if you're offended, apologies. But I guess
they couldn't even mention what was edited, right?
Right, exactly. The
God that dare not speak his name. They're so offended by it that even in apologizing for omitting it, they can't say what's being omitted. And you hit it right on the head. Live by the sword of political correctness. Die by the sword of political correctness.
Yeah, incredible. Dan, great to have you with us today. We'll talk to you a little bit later in the week.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.